We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome. It is a beautiful Tuesday outside. We're going to have a little Tuesday trifecta for you that actually involves plague squirrels, but that's later on. We got to, you got to build up to plague squirrel. You can't open a show with plague squirrel, although if 2020 needed a mascot, plague squirrel, it's right up there. I don't know what Washington is considering as a new mascot. I wasn't even thinking Plague Squirrel. I'm intimidated early. Plague Squirrel's not the worst idea I've ever heard. Daniel Snyder, we're just going to put that out there for you. Plague Squirrel, a reality.
I kind of like Murder Hornet still. But...
yeah,
and I have Murder a feeling Hornet. That, yeah, the fact that the plague actually began, or at least the first sighting of an animal with plague was in Mongolia. The squirrel may be stealing some thunder here.
Yeah.
We've got multiple plagues going on here. Strap in, kids. The planet's doomed.
Well, I mean, what if they just went with the Washington pandemic? I'm always a fan of singular team names.
The pandemi are here. When they're all together? No, can you have multiple pandemics at the same time? The Washington pandemic, not bad. Not bad. I think I like it more than Generals. It's got more hope than Washington Generals suggests because we know they're losers. Hopefully we can fix the pandemic. By the way, college football is realizing that without an immediate near miracle fix to a pandemic, it's going to be awfully hard to have that season. We don't want to have just murky, murky, murky Outlook Radio for you today. So we're going to have a little bit of fun with you. We got 9 days. 9 days until baseball season. 9 days until a designated hitter haunts a National League for the first time in 144 years of Major League Baseball. And I'll tell you what, it pisses me off more than missing a World Series. We'll get to all that. What San Francisco Giant are you interested in watching? Who are you interested in watching? What stories could you actually lean forward to for the 2020 Giants season, if it is going to happen? All of that today, including number 7 on our Bay Area top 10. But guys, we gotta start with something that hits a little bit closer to home. And I think it hits a little closer home to me because when I was doing the Damon Bruce show before we sat down to do a show together, and this feels like a million years ago now, and it really, in a sports lifetime, it is. Harrison Barnes was a weekly guest on the show. And until we had Steve Kerr on as a weekly guest, I don't know if we've ever had a more interesting, involved, sitting down, curious about things that you were interested in. Harrison Barnes was a wonderful guest, a really, really good guy all the way through and through. He has tested positive for COVID-19. The bad news is he is not in the bubble with the Kings, which I mean, it's good news for the bubble, bad news for the Kings. The good news is he's asymptomatic and may join them in Orlando as soon as he passes all protocols. Harrison Barnes, all day and night long, good guy, family man. I'm guessing someone who isn't out like rocking it at the clubs or anything like that. And for COVID to have knocked on his door, no one's safe. No one is safe at all.
No, it's that's the takeaway from the Harrison Barnes thing, because unless he did something reckless that we don't know about, and we should consider the possibility, the fact is he's the sort of guy where COVID sought him. I mean, somehow, you know, it was in a benign place. I mean, I don't think it, you know, sort of jumped off it, out of his rec room. I mean, maybe he went to a supermarket, you know, I mean, but he doesn't seem the guy who would, you know, in the middle of the night in a quarantine bubble go, you know what I need? Takeout.
Right. And he's never impressed me as the kind of guy who burnt the candle on both ends. You know, if there was a chance someone was in bed at curfew, it was going to be Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, I don't think this is something we know, right? Anyone can catch this just going about their necessary activities, not even their normal activities, because I don't think anyone's been doing that for a while. No one responsible anyway, but just going about the necessary activities. You mentioned the grocery store, you know, maybe you're walking the dog. We know so little about how this has passed that all those things are possible. And I guess in part, that, maybe this is counterintuitive, but that is part of why the NBA's bubble has always seemed, while not ideal or perfect, the best solution to a really tricky problem. And frankly, about as safe, if not safer, than just living your normal life. You know, I guess it's possible that some NBA players have enough money and live a lifestyle such that they really can reduce risk to zero when they're at home. And if they choose to stay home for that reason, so be it. I have more power to them. But I think for the most part, you know, those of us who can't live totally isolated because we can't afford it, we got to do things like grocery runs. We got to do things like walk our own dog. And that comes with some level of risk the way the world is right now. So I don't know. In a lot of ways, the positive tests heading into the bubble have encouraged me that the bubble is not such a bad idea.
The bubble exists to be a filtration system. Think of it more like Brita, you know, than necessarily a bubble. You're just trying to remove all of the dangerous impurities before you get in there, and whether or not it can stay pure, we do not know, but you will not know until you actually try to do it. The best you can is try to filter out the guys who are testing positive. And Shams has reported two things today. Number one, I guess it's wrong to call it a snitch line because it's not snitching if it's well-intended, but the phone line of reporting inside the bubble has apparently rung a few times. So players are being vigilant, and I think that we'll take it for what it is, vigilance, before we start saying people are trying to call wolf on somebody, maybe getting a better seed or anything nefarious like that. The other thing that Shams has is proof positive that the Brooklyn Nets are going to be fielding the biggest JV team in the history maybe of the NBA. Like, if you thought what the Golden State Warriors were reduced to this year by an injury and circumstances were dramatic, wait until you see what has happened to the Brooklyn Nets. Now, Michael Beasley.
Calm down, said the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, really, man. Michael Beasley tests positive for coronavirus, so his net career lasts about a week. Remember, he was signed up to be a replacement player. He did return home. His roster status is up in the air. That is Shams over at The Athletic. So, I mean, the Nets are a hodgepodge of guys you've never even really seen or heard of. And anyone who might have given them a moment of competitive basketball in terms of you're playing an NBA game, it's, man, if the Nets win a game in this bubble, I'll be surprised.
Not only are they winning games, they're going to the playoffs.
But they might not win a game in the bubble.
I have to look at their schedule, but if they play the Wizards, I think they got a darn good chance of it. Have you seen the Wizards roster?
Wizards are limping too.
These two teams in particular. You know, look, we could argue about how worthwhile it is to have the Spurs or the Suns there. neither of them are that interesting. But I can, the Suns are okay. Since in respect to Nash, I'll say the Suns are mildly interesting with Devin Booker. But the Spurs aren't very interesting. These two teams, the Wizards and Nets, they're not NBA teams right now. They're just not. I mean, I pulled up these rosters for reference, and just I guess I would say that Ish Smith is probably
sure.
The best Wizard reporting, which is, you know, I like Ish Smith as like a end of the bench third point guard type of guy who can give you a burst, but my God, if he's your best player, you're not playing with the big boys. And on top of that, as you know, all these other teams are playoff teams for the most part, so you don't get any easy games either.
Nicest thing you can say about Ish Smith is that he's NBA-ish. He's NBA-ish. He's not fully NBA. He's NBA-ish. If he's your best player, you're in a whole lot of trouble. You hardly have a G League team. We are just underway. Developments from in the bubble. A conversation about Steph Curry returning to possibly the status of the best player in the NBA. That was the theory of our first guest today, Will Gottlieb of Bleacher Report, who's going to join us at 3 o'clock. At 3:30, we will be revealing our number 7 athlete selected by you, our listeners, submitting your top 10. Number 7 comes up at 3:30 today. We're going to talk with Jim Barnett today, and a little bit later on, a surprise for you this afternoon. Plus, our Tuesday trifecta all set up lovingly and ready to roll, just like the bubonic plague seems to be in the squirrel community. So we're ready to dance. Hopefully you are too. The dance floor has been cleared, and let's boogie, baby. 888-957-9570 is the number. You know, football really isn't a sport. It is part of America's infrastructure, which makes canceling it a very hard thing to do, but that is coming more and more into focus, not just collegiately, but sort of in the NFL as well. We're going to talk about that when we come on back here. We're just underway. We're brought to you by Safeway, which offers grocery delivery, fresh, fast, delivered to your door, drive up and go at certain locations. Download the Safeway delivery and pickup app or visit Safeway.com for $20 off your first order using promo code SAVE20. Safeway, come on in and explore. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
With still quite a bit of runway between us and the start of college football season, college football has a serious concern about whether or not it can pull it off. Baseball's got 9 days. We'll see if baseball's actually going to pull it off. I know one of the things that we were talking about in our pre-show meeting this afternoon was, would Major League Baseball experience any sort of disruption here in California? And I know that Ray and Matt, you guys were talking about that, looking into that. And as far as I'm concerned, as it stands right now, as we kind of rolled things back to, what do you want to call it, like phase 1.5, kind of where we are right now, as we roll things back, will we have opening night baseball 9 days from now at Dodger Stadium, which last time I checked was in Los Angeles, which is in the state of California? Has that been threatened or jeopardized by the rollback? And the only thing that I've got is the presumption. And my presumption is that if it did include a threat to that game, we would know about it. That feels like way too big a detail to not be included in the press conference. As we start rolling back restrictions on businesses opening, I don't think that that's going to apply to the coming baseball season. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the more I look and the more I can't find a definitive answer, even after Gavin Newsom's presser yesterday, it leads me to think that, yeah, they're going to try to start this. I think it's a terrible idea, but I think they're going to do it. And they'll keep going until they hit the tipping point, which will be a lot of guys getting sick. And not just players, but coaches, managers, front office. I mean, just the whole works. It's it's been so slapdash from the start, I almost can't imagine a scenario in which it doesn't blow up quickly.
It does seem crazy to send people. I mean, it's crazy enough, although, again, I feel okay about it so far, to send people to a bubble in Orlando. It seems even crazier to send people to not bubbles in a variety of cities or places, all or some of which may be significantly less safe than where they live. That in and of itself, never mind the implications for public health of having guys traveling back and forth city to city and then living in whatever city they live in and going to the grocery store and doing all the things that, human beings need to do. It really does seem wildly irresponsible, particularly as California rolls back, you know, openings of things. I don't see how you can say you're doing this in a thoughtful way.
By the way, had we not been in full pandemic mode, today would have been the All-Star Game. The 2020 All-Star Game at Dodger Stadium would have been this evening. And let's not even do the segment. How many Giants might have made the All-Star Game that didn't happen? It's probably not a very long list. It wouldn't take us very long to do that segment. We will talk about what excites us about the coming Giants season in a little while. It won't be Yasiel Puig, gentlemen, who has signed a deal with the Braves. How about that? That's a little bit of baseball news that happened this afternoon.
I'm disappointed, aren't you?
I don't know. Are they? I think they're last place with him, without him. It's just a pure, did you want a little something more interesting to watch? And I thought that he would have been something a little bit more interesting to watch, really.
But think about the question you just asked. Do you want something a little more interesting to watch? Of course I do. For God's sakes, yes, I do.
Give me something other than, geez, I hope this albatross contract could prove itself tradable. Because that's really kind of where we are.
That and, like, the couple of prospects that you hope make the team.
Yeah. Yeah. Mauricio Dubon's follow-up year after playing about 35 games. Let's see what
maybe
you got.
Maybe a little Jalen Davis action,
Sure. Alex Dickerson, can you stay healthy? Yeah. Ray, what are you looking forward to?
Wow, that was delusional. One, I never gave a thought to Puig signing here, because if he had any options at all, he wasn't coming. He wasn't coming to San Francisco for the same reason that hitters never come to San Francisco. And the longer it took for him to sign, the clearer it was to me that the Giants either weren't interested or were trying to get him on a low ball deal. So the fact that the Braves could just sit back and go, well, we have a lineup. We have a park where you can hit home runs. We have a chance to make the playoffs. What's to hate other than the fact that you're going from one hotspot state to another?
Otherwise, the water's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought that Puig made much sense just as a reality thing. And I think he would have been I shouldn't say this, because apparently he was a real good citizen in Cincinnati and Cleveland by all accounts. But those are places where you have a chance to hit. I think in a place like San Francisco where you don't, if you put the ball up in the air, you're hitting outs. I think he would have found that very frustrating very quickly. And he would not have been worth the gamble because of it.
What to watch? That's coming up in a little bit. Again, this afternoon, we're going to reveal number 7 in our all-time Bay Area top 10 list, decided by you, our listeners. That reveal comes up at 3:30. A little bit later on this afternoon, we're going to say hello to a guy that we have not talked to in a real long time, Jim Barnett, on what he thinks of the NBA's bubble and what the Warriors accomplished in a difficult year, what they need to do getting ready to get better going forward. That's coming up at 3 o'clock today. Will Gottlieb of the Bleacher Report wrote a just luxurious piece about who Steph Curry is in this league, saying that a healthy Steph Curry is the best player in the NBA. And sure, that's a conversation we're going to have at 3 o'clock today. Pete Thamel, who is a very, very good writer, college football, he covers it, Yahoo Sports, had a big dose of reality that not a lot of people really want to confront. Again, bargaining is part of the 5 stages of grief, and that's where a lot of athletic directors still are. Why wouldn't they be? There's a lot of things to be uncovered in the Pete Thamel be worried about college football this coming season piece. The thing that jumped out to me, it was kind of buried in the middle, was that athletic departments who consider themselves top 25 athletic departments. Now, that's not just 25 athletic departments. That's athletic departments who might find themselves in the college football top 25. So that's, you know, 60, 70 schools, 80 schools out there envision themselves. Yeah, we could have a year like that. We have the facilities, the infrastructure, and so on and so forth to enter the, do you think they might go to a bowl conversation? Like, that's a top 25 school. All top 25 athletic departments stand to, with a cancellation of a college football season, stand to lose at least $60 million. That's best case scenario for every athletic department in the country that fancies itself worthy of top 25 conversation. $60 million minimum. The chances of college football being played in some recognizable form this fall, according to Pete Thamel, are similar to attempting to keep a candle lit while walking 10 miles in a hurricane. It's a pretty good line, and it sets up the chances and the task and how daunting it is. And we don't want to talk about it, because, like, the last thing we want to do is throw another, like, this is going to totally suck log on the fire. But, fellas, this is going to totally suck, and this log is going on the fire, and I don't think we're going to get a lick of college football, and the SEC is going to make some big decisions in the coming days, weeks, and months. The concept of football might be over by Friday.
I think there's a ripping the Band-Aid off element to it that I kind of hope it is over by Friday. Because the longer this drags out, we'll only play conference games, yeah, we're going to have some students on campus, but not all of them. It just, not only is it becoming more and more obviously irresponsible, but I don't think it makes it any better. I don't think it makes the process of giving up college football or football altogether, because frankly, the NFL faces a lot of the same issues. And they may go ahead and do it anyway, but I don't see how they do it safely. So, in my mind, it's almost the sooner the better. Just rip that Band-Aid off. We're not doing it. It can't happen.
No, the NFL will be fine. They have those big plastic masks. No one will get sick. Everybody will be fine. The only thing about the college thing that confuses me is that if that's the way people were leaning when Pete Thamel started reporting this, why go to the trouble of canceling non-conference games first? Because if you have to come out a week later and say, we're not doing this at all, people are going to want to know what changed so dramatically that you went from 12 games to 9 games to 0 games.
Isn't it just a bunch of people trying not to be the one who has to say it first?
Well, that's what it looks like to me. Well, maybe, but then you didn't really have to say anything at all. Because if that's the end game, why would you go through the rigmarole of saying, well, we've done a lot of study and we got rid of 3 games, and then a week later, when there wasn't much more studying to do, we got rid of them all. I don't think that they're going to play this year, but I think those decisions are going to get pushed back another couple of weeks, only because the Big Ten is usually pretty wired on the way college football works. They and the SEC run college football in ways that the Big 12 can't, in the ways that the ACC won't, except for Clemson, and in the way that the Pac-12 is just, they're a glorified group of five conference with, better shoreline. That's the only thing that I would question is, why go to that extent a week ago to turn it around a week later? I think this is going to take a while longer because I think they all don't want to be the first, and they're willing to wait each other out in this hilarious game of chicken in which the bait is athletes.
I think we've got some sports information directors, SIDs, just trying to justify their salaries. I mean, we get press releases about what schools are thinking about, much less here's the news and the decision that they've been thinking about. We've concluded. We've reached it. This is the end of the race. We'll tell you how it came out. I think you got a little bit of people trying to justify their place in athletic departments, and right now it's maybe oversharing too much information in the urge to be transparent. Look, Brett McMurphy, who we've had on the show, he's one of the best, Stadium Network. He basically had a tweet today that gives up the GOAT. I mean, whether people want to admit it or not, this gives up the entire game right here. The SEC today did announce that it is postponing the start of volleyball, soccer, and cross country through at least August 31st. That does not impact football. Again, it gives up the entire game right there. The kids who cost us money as an athletic department, you need to stay home until you get further instruction. The kids who make us money as an athletic department, you need to report to campus until further instruction. There is so much being said in that one tweet and directive alone. The college football player, I've said this months ago, I think we've all agreed on this, the college football player is among the most essential employees in all of America, and what makes them so essential is that they're the only employees who pretty much work for free. College football, college athletes, basketball too, major stuff, are the only free workforce really in America outside of prison labor, which I still think they make like 11 cents an hour, which if a kid did that in college, might be an NCAA violation. Colleges, campuses, athletic departments are in desperate need of the college football team service to provide income.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all of that's true, but when you read the Thamel piece, and this is not about sports information directors, they only do what they're told by their athletic directors.
Right.
Athletic directors have no motive to be as pessimistic, even off the record, as they were with Thamel. And I don't think Thamel's a guy who's going to pick and choose quotes to, you know, tell a story that he's decided is the story, even if he doesn't have the evidence. I think he's been told by a number of people in a number of areas that they don't think this is coming off, that they don't think they're going to be able to start this at all. And the only thing that gives me pause about the timing is, again, the fact that, you know, those three major conferences, you know, lopped off, you know, one quarter of their schedules. That said, nothing that we've heard from the Big 12, nothing from the SEC about their football programs, that suggests to me that they're waiting on each other, probably, or the Big 10 to just do it ahead of everyone, since they were the first ones to get rid of the non-conference games. I think they're all waiting for the Big Ten to be the thumb that knocks over the first domino that takes out the other 10.
Yeah, maybe it's as simple as that. But, I just don't think there's anything to gain by waiting at this point. There's no conceivable way you can safely play college football. Because, again, I mean, Damon, you're making the point that, like, normal college football is basically happening already. Like, these kids would be involved in some sort of training already in all likelihood. And there's no way you're going to be able to do that leading up to the season properly and safely. You can't. And everybody knows it. And I'm not, even for college football, cynical as the people who run it are, that feels like a bridge too far.
You know who you sound like? You sound like Red leaning over to Andy Dufresne and telling them that hope is a dangerous thing. And that's what's happening here. Why aren't they just tearing off that Band-Aid? To leave some hope out there. But hope is probably a dangerous thing in the instance of college football right now. It really, truly is. Thamel even goes on, his piece starts basically saying, but for a medical miracle, here's the future that is waiting for you, college football. And it doesn't include any games. He goes on to say the best way to look at the Big Ten and Pac-12's decisions to cancel non-conference games is not to look through it as health and safety points, but to look at the chronological steps that are remaining that we will take eventually here. The first step is status quo. Nothing has changed. The SEC, Big 12, and ACC, well, no, the ACC did go ahead and cancel non-conference, but the SEC, the Big 12. Conference play with the ability to delay a season, that's the Big 10 and the Pac-12. ACC are with them. The talk of spring, he says, moving all conference play to spring after January 1, he said that this is gaining conversation, but it has its detractors. And then the final step is cancel. And Pete Thamel says that there are more people talking about canceling than fans would actually want to know. So it feels like we're slowly being prepared and we're being told, like, you know, grandma's not going to last the week, so you better start preparing yourself mentally here. I'm telling you, prepare yourself mentally for college football to be scuttled in its entirety. If not this week, next week, it's a reality. It truly, truly is. And it sucks. It hurts. It really is going to be wildly damaging, like forever damaging to athletic departments. If Stanford can be forever damaged by the coming winds of change, there's no one that is going to be immune to it. And really, when you think about it, guys, football, what it does collegiately, what it does in every NFL city, football isn't just a sport. It's not. It's part of America's infrastructure. It is ingrained in our year as any single subject in America. I think you could make that argument. Football is something that you plan family outings, trips, vacations around. It is part and parcel to so many, forget tickets being sold, but hotel rooms being rented and drinks being sold and waiters and waitresses and bartenders being tipped. And it is a trillion, multi-trillion dollar mover in our economy. And that's, you know, that's when you add in the media and rights and broadcasting and all that stuff, including the janitor that gets hired to clean up the parking lot after the tailgate's over. It's multi-trillions of dollars. Football is as important to America's economy as bridges are to America's highway system. We're in trouble.
I'm not sure we are, because I think this shakeout's been waiting to happen for a while. But, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of us, because, you know, the virus is going to take four or five different turns before we get to that point.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. It's not football that's going to cause those things. It's the virus. Football, to me, is a symptom of what's happening rather than a cause.
Okay. And that's right. It's just that, you know, the idea that universities tie their economies to their football teams,
yeah,
has been an ass backwards worldview for a long time,
yep,
but it became ingrained. What I think, though, and Matt made the point earlier, is that he doesn't know why they're waiting. And I think I know why they're waiting, because the minute you say you're done, there's no going back. It's like the grandmother analogy that Damon used. They're just, once you declare grandmother dead, she's not going to rise up again. And it's the finality of it that I think scares athletic directors. They may know it's coming, but they don't want to pull the plug yet. And it's not just because they don't want to be first. It's because they don't want to do the irrevocable thing that in a 1 in 1,000 shot might not be necessary. Because that's when jobs get lost. You know, you cost a university $60 million. You don't survive. And so I think that's part of it, too. It's that there's a fear not only of the economic impact, but on the employment carnage. And once you say you're done, everything else is out of your control. And I think that scares them more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what is so frustrating about all of this is the wrong human impulses are winning.
They always do.
You know, well, that yeah, fair enough. But in these particular cases, it's not wrong for people to want to make money. It's not wrong for people to want to get back to normal life, but it is wrong to let your frustration lead you to actions that are just going to really make it worse in the long run. And that's really what we're dealing with here, is actively bringing students back to school in this environment, bringing football teams on the field in this environment, not only puts them at risk, but increases the risk of more explosion of the virus, which puts us all at more risk. And it's, you know, I don't know how you fix that right now when the money motivations just seem to consistently win.
We talk about the wrong intentions leading the way. I mean, there's about to be a designated hitter in the National League, for goodness sake. So there's proof right there. We got to take a quick break.
Okay, stop a second before we take the break. I want you to think about this. Why is it the universal DH that bothers you more than starting a guy at second base in extra innings or forcing pitchers to face extra guys?
Oh, I'll tell you why. On the other side of the break. That's a great setup, Ray. That's a great tease. Ray just teased a forward promo. There it is. We're coming back with
that. Will you get on with it, for God's sake?
I am telling you, man, this designated hitter thing pisses me off more than Major League Baseball canceling a World Series. It really does. It really, really does. I'll have that for you. We do have, at 3 o'clock, a conversation about Steph Curry, and it's been a long time since we had one of those. Let's just have one of those for good old-fashioned times. It'll be like sports and normalcy has revealed itself here in the age of bubonic plague squirrels, which is kind of what we're also dealing with today. Squirrels with bubonic plague in Colorado. Have a good time. Rocky Mountain High, everybody. We are brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Come on. Coming up at 3 o'clock, we're going to jump into the NBA. We're going to jump into Steph Curry's career with a man who just wrote an article about Steph Curry, calling him the best player in the NBA. Will Gottlieb of the Bleacher Report joins us at 3 o'clock today. You just asked, why do I not like the designated hitter in the National League? That's it. I don't like the designated hitter in the National League. That is me. That's who I am. Maybe you like butterscotch. Maybe you like chocolate. It's up to you. I've been an NL guy my entire life. I can't explain it. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. I was a Cub fan growing up, so the National League is the league that I followed. It's, to me, putting a designated hitter in the National League for the first time in 144 years is disrespectful to 144 years of the way we do things around here. I like more language, more dialects in the language. I think one of the worst things about the United States is that we're a one-language country, or certainly a one-language people for the most part. White people are one-language people for the most part. That makes us less interesting, not more interesting because we've cornered a market. I like the difference. I do. It's not right. It's not wrong. It's just me. It's, you know, did you like The Outsiders or The Goonies? They're both important, but I'm kind of more of a Goonies guy. That's just me.
More specifically, though, was why does that bother you more than putting a runner on second in extra innings or making a pitcher face extra hitters, which I think, and I am speculating, but it seemed to me that Ray was suggesting, and I would agree with him if it was what he was suggesting, that those things are actually much more contrary to the spirit of how we do things in the sport of baseball than the DH, which, of course, has been a part of baseball for a very long time. And not only that, but has been a part of every single National League team, at least some of the time, for what, a decade? 20 years?
Yeah, however long we've been doing interleague play.
What?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, putting the runner at second base or, you know, forcing managers to make a pitcher face three batters are things that can affect every game. The National League DH affects about 45% of the games when you factor in interleague and American League. It causes way more, those two things cause way more damage to the game than the universal designated hitter. I mean, I'm with you. I think it's a stupid idea. It addresses no problems. It's the kind of lazy thinking that we've come to know and love from Rob Manfred and his band of merry elves. But it's not as disturbing to the notion of the sport as those other two things. And when they ban the shift in a year, which is coming too, that's another thing where all of a sudden now, you know, somebody in New York gets to micromanage a manager while he's managing. I mean, they already have enough of that from their own general
managers. I'd like to talk about that, though, because the shift one is interesting to me. Quickly on the DH, my position is I don't care. If people want the DH, want to not have a DH, I'm fine with that. I also enjoy the difference, I suppose. I also just don't think it's a big deal. It's been a part of baseball for a long time. But I am intrigued by the shift discussion because part of me is with Ray and thinks, if managers figured out a good place to put their defenders, how are you going to tell them not to do that? That seems ridiculous. On the other hand, I feel that what baseball needs to be a more popular sport now and in the future is more of the baseball action I grew up with. Which means less three-outcome baseball, which means more balls in play. And it seems to me like outlawing shifts, while awkward, is something we might get over kind of quickly that would increase balls in play. Don't you think?
I think hitters with a different approach at the plate, looking to go the opposite field, looking to go the other way. This whole launch angle, ball must leave ballpark, I think is a bigger problem than shifts. Shifts were employed against Ted Williams at Fenway. Shifts are part of the game's history. It happens. I don't think it's right to tell a team you can't go about trying to win a baseball game this way. Like, to me, baseball needs to be worried about cheating more than shifting, and it seems to be worried more about shifting than cheating. To your questions about the runner on second and the three-pitcher minimum, don't think for a second that I don't hate those too. I do. I hate those, but I really do think there is a chance that those might go the way of the dodo when we come back to a normal 162-game baseball season, whenever that might be. Once the DH is in the National League, it's never going away. It's never, ever going to go away because it's a position. The union will fight for it. And it's another guy on the roster, which the union is always going to fight for. So it's never going to go away. And that is why I don't like it. That is why I hate it. And it does. It bothers like missing the World Series 1 year. Okay, that affected 1 year. Steroids. It didn't really bother me. Bud Selig's botching the All-Star game. That pissed me off. I didn't like it. What do you mean we're just going to call it a tie? Pitch him until his freaking arm falls off, for goodness sakes. This is not my fault that this team was mismanaged through an All-Star game. I hated the fact that the All-Star game decided home field advantage during the World Series. I hate Pete Rose betting on baseball. But none of that do I hate more than the DH in the National League. I can't explain it. It's not reasonable. Some people like the Big Dipper. Some people like the Little Dipper. I hate the DH in the National League. It's fine in the American League. It's lovely. Leave it there.
Your wife needs to have you sat down for a long talk. And the long talk, the subject of the long talk will be prioritization. Because you get to hate the universal DH. I don't like it either. But when you have to prioritize what are the worst things, the runner on second base is infinitely worse. And I don't know why you think that's going to go away either once it starts. I mean, these are all creations of Rob Manfred and his band of merry men, and they're not going to back away from that when baseball regains whatever normal is after the end of this.
They don't
love rule changes, and their names are on it.
They don't cut off garlic fry sales in the 11th inning. That's why this whole runner on second thing will eventually go away, I believe. You got a captive audience of people who are there still buying Cokes and lemonades, even though they stop selling beers after the seventh. The longer this game goes on, the more commerce can be done in the ballpark. That is something that I think owners will fight for. I do expect that to vanish at some point. Also, your game's got to go into extra innings for that to rear its ugly head. By the time you send eight hitters to the plate, we are going to go through the designated hitters now up. Or maybe the designated hitter is going to lead off. Who knows what you're going to do with your DH. I don't like it. The DH, universal, will rear its head in every game. The guy on second will not rear his head in every game. I'm not saying that there are a lot of complete games anymore, but three batter minimum, it will not rear its head in every single game. The night that the Yankees throw the first pitch of the season against the defending World Series champion Washington Nationals, 144 years of tradition thrown out of National League ballparks forever. I don't like that.
And I don't say you should. I just think that there are worse things than that. And the fact that baseball has managed to pick three things that have nothing to do with its real problem speaks more to why the game is screwed up than anything else. Because clamoring for any of those things.
What's the first thing you would do to fix the actual problem?
I would, first of all, figure out a way either through making the strike zone bigger or in some other way creating hitters who aren't always swinging from their rear end so that it stops becoming useful to go walk, strikeout, homer. That's a thing that, frankly, general managers who aren't data freaks will have to do, because there's got to be a way to prioritize athleticism in a game that has less and less of it. And if you think that's not true, go watch Franmil Reyes take a few at-bats. I mean, he's an upright refrigerator who does one thing, just swings from the heels and waits for it to go out. You've got to figure out ways to make the game more athletic. You've got to figure out ways to make the game more representative of a changing demographic structure in the United States. You've got to make it so that you get the sense that this is not a thing you have to wait for. You want that situation where anything can happen at nearly any moment, and even though the game is naturally slower, there needs to be more action than there is now. There needs to be more athleticism than there is now. And until they figure that out, we're going to be stuck with the kind of static baseball that is proving to be repellent in every sector of the country at all times.
But was it? Local TV ratings were up as it was. I mean, it might not be getting the Super Bowl audience that it hoped for Game 7s of the World Series, but that is kind of... baseball is a provincial sport, and what it's definitely not is a modern sport. Trying to take something and fit it into modern times is the wrong way to go about managing the sport of baseball. I have been told that there are more problems with baseball than I ever actually identified myself as the problems with baseball. To me, baseball's number one problem is you don't know who half these guys are, more than half these guys. They've done a terrible job marketing themselves. Like, the Giants are great at it. I know more about cups of coffee and bums because of the San Francisco Giants being a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, marketing machine. I mean, look at the A's. The A's have so much more interesting young star power, and they don't know how to sell an $8 ticket. I mean, that to me is a bigger problem. Get stars. Market your stars. People want to come see stars. That's what they want. They don't want...
Well, this is a platoon that is tailor-made right for this specific lineup.
No, you want your star first baseman taking hacks, even though the pitcher's also a lefty. I mean, I just think there's specialization has hurt the game as much as anything. But you can't deny strategy. So now we're back at the beginning. Look, the lack of action is without a doubt a major problem. the lack of, to me, a bang bang play at first base is action. So even a ground ball to the shortstop can be action. You know, if it's deep enough in a hole where you got a little excitement over there, I think taking away the collision at home plate, it made the game safer. It also took away one of the only, whoa, moments that you would get the entire afternoon.
And honestly, I don't even think it did. That play is exciting even if you don't crash into somebody. Like, it's a scoring play in a game that doesn't have very many of them. And that to me is the crux of the issue. More guys scoring on plays, less guys scoring after crushing the ball out of the ballpark. And that's why the shift thing, while I understand the opposition and I'm not sure I'm for it, is interesting to me.
We'll get back into baseball, what you're looking forward to this year. But it is officially time to say hello to our first guest this afternoon as we move into our 3 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.